Hi, welcome to Visual Studio Toolbox. I'm your host, Robert Green. Joining me today is Navit Saxena.
Hi, Navit. Robert.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Navit's a PM on the Visual Studio team, and we're going to talk about building Windows 10 apps today.
Absolutely.
This is very exciting stuff.
Absolutely. A lot of excitement around Build, and I'm glad to be here to talk about building universal Windows app.
We've talked about Windows apps on the show a few times, 8.8.1, and you're going to show us how much better it is on Windows 10, particularly around this concept of the universal apps.
That's correct. And we have done a lot of work, a lot of great stuff in Windows 10. And today I will go and highlight some of the key points in Visual Studio that we have done to actually allow developers to easily build adaptive applications that work across all Windows 10 devices.
So I
can get started with giving a quick introduction of Universal Windows Platform. If you think about Universal Windows Platform, I kind of think about three big highlights, right? Number first is Unified Developer Platform, right? If you remember Windows 8.1, Windows Phone 8.1 world, we were on a path of convergence.
Right.
There were a lot of APIs that were being converged, but still there were some phone-specific APIs, and also that platform was not really one platform. It was different platform running on Windows 8.1 and Windows Phone 8.1. With Windows 10, we finally have a unified developer platform that runs across all Windows 10 devices, whether it's your desktop, your PC, your mobile, Xbox, IoT, Surface Hub, or Internet of Things.
Right.
Every Windows 10 device will running same developer platform, same Winati platform. And that's exciting for developers, because now they don't need to worry about different technologies or different APIs. It's just same Winati APIs that exist everyone, same platform that's working on all Windows 10 devices.
Right.
The second big highlight is single application package. Again, if you go back to Windows Phone 8.1, we were asking developers to share their code and build two different application packages that goes to two different stores, one for Windows 8.1 and other to Windows Phone 8.1.
Right. So you could share code, but you had to build the UI twice.
Yes.
So instead of having one app, it was
you
really more like one and a half apps.
Oh, yeah.
You build the app one and a half times.
That is correct. And ultimately, you will be loading two different packages.
Right.
So think about that. If you have to go and make a bug fix, you make a bug fix in Windows Phone 8.1 or in the shared code, and you build two packages that, again, you have to go and upload to the store, right? With Windows 10, we finally have binary compatibility. So you can actually build a single application package that works across all Windows 10 devices. Same app working on HoloLens to IoT to Xbox to desktop to PC, right? Given that, there are still some capabilities that are specific to a device family. Let's think about mobile, right? If you think about phone, the phone has a status bar or a tray at the top, right? Which is still very something which is very specific to a phone. It doesn't exist on desktop or Xbox. Similarly, a lot of sensors, if you think about it, there will be some sensors which are specific to desktop or Xbox, right? So there will be some set of capabilities that are specific to a device family, and we will allow developers to use that capabilities and still build a single application package that works across all the devices. And we'll take a look at some of the examples of how to do that, right?
Cool.
That is where we will talk about adaptive code, of how you can use adaptive code to actually use the device-specific capabilities and still maintain a single application package.
Right.
And finally, when you think about Universal Windows Platform and its outreach, you will be running your application on a mobile device which is 4-inch in size to a 6-inch device, to a tablet, to a PC, to your TV, or to a HoloLens device where the world is your canvas, right? So you need to think about adaptive UI as well. How are you going to go and change the UI of your application so that it gives you the great experience to the consumers when it's running on different form factors?
Right.
So we'll look into some examples of adaptive UX as well.
Cool.
So before we go and look at the demos, if you want to go and build a universal Windows app, you need to make sure you have the right tools. And you can go and to the dev.windows.com. You can click on Download Tools. And here, you can go and click on Windows 10 Developer Tools. And you first need to get the right version of OS. So you can sign in for a Windows Insider program. Make sure you are running Windows 10, which is 174 build or higher, which is required for Visual Studio RC build. And then you can download VS right here from here as well. Or you, if you want to go download VS, you can also go to visualstudio.com and then go and download Visual Studio 2015 RC build.
Okay.
When you're downloading VS, an important thing is you should definitely go to the custom setup and make sure you have selected Universal Windows App Development Tools, right? And if you're interested in emulators, you should select emulators as well. Without these, everything I'm going to go and show in the demos will require these tools to be installed. So make sure these are selected and installed on your machine.
Because they're not selected by default.
It depends from the ways you're. If you're coming from dev.windows.com, then it will be selected by default.
Okay.
But if you're coming from visualstudio.com, then it will not be selected. So best interest for the developers to make sure these are selected and installed.
Okay.
So once the tools are installed, if you go and bring up new project dialog, you will see the Universal Windows templates under Visual C Sharp, Windows, Windows Universal Node. Mm-hmm. And you can use the blank app as a starting point for building your application. Today, I'm going to use one of the sample applications that I have been working on for the last few weeks. It's a cookbook application. It's a pretty simple app. Let's go and run this application first on mobile.
Okay.
So I have already launched the mobile emulator so that it doesn't take a lot of time. But it will just deploy, and it's a very simple application. The idea is that I should be able to quickly browse through different categories of recipes, go and select a particular recipe, and then think about what is required to make this recipe, what are the cooking instructions, and stuff like that.
Okay.
So here my app is now deployed on my emulator. And as I was mentioning, there are different categories in here. I can click on a category, let's say bread. It shows me a set of recipes. Mm-hmm. I can click on a recipe, it shows me a set of instructions and ingredients and everything to make this, right?
Right.
Now, one thing that I'm seeing is at the top, the status bar is the system tray is still visible in my application. And I really want this my app to be the full screen, to take maximum space which is available on the phone device.
Okay.
So let's go and actually fix that. So I will stop debugging. And if you remember, I was mentioning that status bar is something which is mobile specific, right? So if I want to go and use that, I will actually need a reference to mobile extension SDK. So what you can do is you can right click on add reference on your project and add a reference. This brings up the add reference dialog. You can select the extensions node and you will see there is a Microsoft mobile extension SDK for Universal App Platform.
Okay.
So which I've already added a reference. So you can select this and add the reference and you will see it being referenced in the project right here.
Yep.
Okay. Once you have added the reference, you can go and start using the APIs, which are specific to mobile device family. So in this case, I want to hide the status bar. So I'm going to say Windows.UI.ViewManagement.StatusBar.GetForCurrentView. And I will call hide async. Because it's an async call, I will put an await. And that's pretty much it. So let's go and run this application again on my emulator. And if everything goes good, my status bar will not be visible this time when I run my application. And you'll notice that the status bar is no longer visible. I can go and use the application. It's not visible throughout the application. Now, I mentioned that this is a mobile-specific API.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens if I go and run the same application on desktop?
Right.
Right. So let's actually go and do that.
That line will either be ignored or it will crash.
Let's see what happens. So this is the same project.
Yep.
And you can see we have given you all different deployment targets. You can run it on local machine, on a connected phone device, on emulators, or you can use remote machine to deploy the same project to Xbox, IoT, or a HoloLens device. So let's select the local machine and run this application. And as you were mentioning, I would expect this application to crash, and the crash would be that this particular type is not found.
Right.
Right? So let's actually go and see if that really happens. And that is, here my application is running. And as Robert mentioned, it crashes with type load exception because status bar is not available when you are running on our desktop device family. So how can you actually still maintain a single application package and use this device family specific APIs?
In 8.1, you would do some pound if or something, right? Yes, if I'm running on the phone.
Exactly.
Which, and you know.
And you no longer have to do that, right? If you are a .NET developer, then you know the concept of reflection, right? Mm-hmm. And what we have done with Windows 10 is basically built in reflection like APIs in the Winati platform itself. So what I'm going to do is use adaptive code and write some adaptive code. So I will say if windows.foundation.metadata.apiinformation. And under API information, you will see new methods like is type present, is method present. So you can check for the presence of a particular type, particular property, particular method, or particular enum value. Let's use is type present because that's what we we will check for. And I will wrap my code in an if check. And the method takes a string for the type. So I will just pass status bar fully qualified as a string to this API. I will set a breakpoint here. And let's run the same code on local machine again. So what this adaptive API is doing, it's actually going and check whether your runtime, the desktop runtime, supports this particular type. So I hit the breakpoint.
So the interesting thing about that is you're not checking whether you're on a phone.
Exactly.
You're checking, does that type exist in the runtime?
Exactly.
So every device that doesn't have that, it'll get turned off.
Exactly.
And every device that does, it won't get turned off.
Yes.
And that's kind of interesting.
That is the great thing, right? Because the platforms are evolving, the device is evolving itself. So you cannot go and say this is a particular is a phone device, or this is really a tablet device, or this is an Xbox device, right? So you should stay away from doing like device specific checks, but instead you should check for the presence of a particular API. So in future, if there's a scenario that desktop actually supports status bar, then this type will result true, and your code will actually execute because it will say the type is actually now present.
Okay.
Right now, if I go and say F10, you will see my code check failed because the type does not exist on desktop. I can continue running my application. So my same app is now running on desktop as well.
So the interesting thing, and I want to back up a second, is go back into Visual Studio for a second. Leave that up and running.
Yes, I can ignore that, yes.
Okay, go into the Solution Explorer. You got one set of views.
Yes.
Yet, when you ran it on the phone, it was vertical, and when you ran it on the desktop, it's horizontal. What's the is there magic behind that? How much of that did you have to do yourself?
It's actually, there's a lot of great stuff that XAML team has done to allow developers to build adaptive UI in Windows 10.
Mm-hmm.
And let's take a look at that, how developers can actually do that.
Because I think this is the critical piece.
Yes.
To this.
Absolutely.
Obviously, the plumbing is there to support it. But as a developer, if I can write the UI once and then have it run on all those devices, that just dramatically reduces the time it takes to design, the time it takes to write, the time it takes to test.
Absolutely. And that is, you will see the power of adaptive UI. And we have done, we have three different approaches that a developer can think about for building adaptive UI. So let's go into my application.
Okay.
And you will notice that in this application, my command bar is still showing up at the bottom, right? If you're thinking about keyboard first, mouse first, then I would prefer this command bar to be at the top when it's running on the desktop. It makes sense when it's at the bottom for a mobile phone, but for desktop, I would really prefer this to be at the top. Similarly, if I go into the recipes, you see my view is still very much catered to a mobile view, right? And I want to go and fix that to actually also render correctly when you are running on desktop.
Okay.
So let's actually go back to VS. The very first thing, I will just open the categories views. So the very first thing a developer should think about when building adaptive UI is there are a lot of new controls that XAML team has introduced, like split view, relative panel, and every control is pretty much adaptive, right? So you, when you're doing adaptive UI, think about using the platform controls like split view and relative panel to lay out your content so that it actually automatically adapts based on the device family that you are running in. So that's the very first fundamental thing, that think about using these new advanced platform controls when you're building adaptive UI. Now, if you have already built a UI, it is possible that you have to tweak your UI a little bit, change visibility of certain controls to look a little bit different, hide some controls when you're running on desktop versus mobile, right? And to do that, you can actually use adaptive triggers. Okay. Right? So adaptive triggers is based on the Visual State Manager, which I'm pretty sure a lot of XAML developers already know.
It's been there for a long time.
For a long, long time.
Although I suspect that now more and more people are going to start using it.
Absolutely.
Depending on the app you're writing, depending on your skill level, it's up to this point been kind of optional.
Yes, but now it's basically becomes an integrated part for building an adaptive UI. So what you can do is you can start writing some code. So what I'm going to do, I will create a Visual State group, and inside the Visual State group, I put a Visual State, and inside Visual State, I will create a state setter. Right, this is a new property. So I will create a state setter, a state trigger, and inside the state trigger, I will define an adaptive trigger. Right, adaptive trigger takes two properties: minimum window height and minimum window width. Right. So if you're thinking about building an adaptive UI, these are the two properties that you need to think about. Right, what is the minimum height for my application to go off into a new UX
experience? Again, the trigger is not the device you're on.
Exactly.
The trigger is the width of the window, which kind of implies that if you're on the desktop and you float the window and then shrink it to a particular size, that trigger will fire.
Exactly.
Cool.
So that is the way. Even on Windows, you can resize your application, and you need to make sure when a user is resizing the application, you get the right user experience and right UI running for your application.
And it also would then give you the ability to target the app for, you know, like a normal desktop. But then if you move it to a larger monitor or Surface Hub, you now know, oh, I'm on an 80-inch screen. I'm going to do something entirely different there.
Exactly. So let's actually do that. And there are some guidance from the XAML team of what is the minimum height and minimum window width that you should consider. It's on MSDN that developers can go. Also, they have published some samples on GitHub for adaptive triggers, and you can create your own custom triggers to fire off different views. And there are some good samples on GitHub as well.
So let's just head out to left field for a second. Can you trigger the triggers in code?
You can trigger the triggers.
So could you use the Face API that was introduced as part of Project Oxford? Detect the person's face, know who they are, and change the UI based on them?
I'm not very sure whether that is going to be supported, but
wouldn't
it's a very interesting
cool?
question. That would be super cool. I don't know whether you can create a custom trigger based on face recognition.
We should have that demo at Build next year.
Power
that
to the
would
developers.
Be cool.
Yeah, you can definitely follow up and see if you can do
It might not be doable today, but that's an awesome idea.
Yeah. So right now, I'm going to stick with minimum window width.
Let's stick with what's in the product.
Yeah, okay. So we have minimum window width. And I will say, I will specify 720 pixels, right? So what it's basically saying that if the device family or the device that my application is running on, it has minimum width 720, then go and fire this trigger.
Okay.
Right? So I have my trigger set up. Now I will go and set some properties. So I will use setters. And if you remember in the old world, we used to write double keyframe animations for changing the properties. They have made it very simple.
Or you had to go into Blend to do that.
Yes,
kind of
exactly. So I will just say now setter, and I will say target property. And we are doing work to actually make sure the IntelliSense also works in this experience. It's not there in RC, but something that we are working on and will probably fix it in future. So right now, I have two command bars. One is the bottom command bar, which is being used for mobile. And I also have a command bar right here in my pivot header. Right. So what I'm going to do, which is you can see the visibility is set to collapsed by default. I'm going to go and select this and set the visibility property. And I say value is equal to visible. Similarly, I will add another setter because I want to go and set the bottom command bar to collapsed. So I'm going to say this.
So you've got two UI elements.
Yes.
Right.
So I have two UI elements, and I'm just toggling the visibility for based on the minimum window width the application is running on. So once this is done, let's actually run the application again. And in this case, because my machine that I'm running on, the device I'm running on, will have more than 720 width, you will notice that we can skip the debug point. And now my bottom command bar is set to collapsed, and the adapter trigger fired up, and so my top command bar is visible, right? So what I've done is fix the UI by changing, toggling certain properties using adaptive triggers. And as I said, you can actually go and do
so
custom triggers as well.
So resize that to less than 720, can we see it?
Let's try doing that.
There we go.
And you can see that's the same. I'm just resizing the window. So I'm not checking for that is a particular desktop or mobile or Xbox device. I'm just using the minimum window width to actually change the UI based on that.
Now, then I guess the question is that the right design pattern for the command bar to be switching from the top to the bottom based on the width when you're not running on a phone? But that's a different question.
That's a different, So now actually let's, now if we go back to the application and let's go and still navigate to the app, we still have this problem that my recipe instruction page is not looking. So first thing is you can, you should think about using default platform controls. Second thing is if you want to change certain properties for these controls, you should think about using adaptive triggers to trigger and toggle the properties in using Visual State Manager. And the final thing is if your UI for your application is dramatically different, right? Think about that if you end up deciding that for desktop, I'm using a grid control or a split view control, but on phone, I really want to use a pivot control, right? A totally different controls altogether. Or if you have a totally dramatic, totally dramatic UI, then maybe the adaptive triggers, if it doesn't work for you, then you can actually go.
But I think one of the benefits is that you get consistency of UI, consistency of the way you use the app across the platform. So to the extent that you can continue to have it work the same way is probably better.
It's better, and we expect that it's going to be rare that you have to end up like where the adaptive trigger scenario will not work. We think it's like globally that should solve all your problems. But if in some case you have a scenario where you think, I just want to load a totally different view, that is also possible.
Potentially, but it's kind of, I mean, you can think of it as looking at the problem backwards. The user's looking at this bigger screen, what UI am I going to present to them? Whereas this is what, this is the UI of the app. How does it adjust based on the size of the screen? Two entirely different questions. I think if you ask the second question, how do I adapt the UI to the screen, not how do I design the UI to the screen, I think you'll wind up with better apps.
That is true.
Not to mention you'll wind up, it's probably less work for you.
Absolutely, right? But let's assume for some scenario, you have to end up doing a total different view, which we expect to be really rare. In that case, you can still do that. And for that, we will actually go and I will create a new folder and say device family desktop. So if you are familiar with, if you have built a Windows 8 or Windows 8.1 application, you might have used MRT. What MRT stands for is Modern Resource Technology, and it is the way the images was loaded in the case of Windows 8 apps. It's pretty cool, right? So if you're building a Windows 8 and Windows 8.1 application, you would have noticed that images had .scale 100, .scale 220, right? And the idea there was that you will have different set of images, and based on the scale factor of the device that you're running on, the MRT will load the right image for you so that the user gets the best experience. And we are just extending the concept of MRT to also support device family and use that to actually load a totally different view. So what I have done is I have using the qualifier device family and I'm using desktop here, right? Now I can go and bring up add new item and select the XAML view, right? So this XAML view does not have a code behind. So you can actually share your code behind between different XAML views, right? And you can just go and add a XAML view in here. What I have done is I already have one prepared for desktop. So I'm just gonna go and use that. So we will go up here. I'll go to desktop view, and I will just rename to be recipe instructions. And that's it. So as I was telling you, this does not have a code behind.
Okay.
If I open up this XAML page, you will see the X class is still the same as the X class which is being used for my other recipe instructions.
Yeah.
So this is the same X class which is being used. The code behind it is actually shared, so all your event handler, or if you're building an MVVM app, all your commands and everything is actually shared between the two views. Only the XAML is different.
Okay.
Right? So I've added a desktop specific XAML view in my application. Now let's actually go and run this application again. So the way this works is this view is part of your application package. When you're running on it, it says that there is a device family specific view that you want to load for that particular page. So when the initialize component gets called, it automatically finds the matching view and gives it instead of returning the main view. Right? So let's go and run this application. And here, if you see, my UI looks much better, right? So, and this is what the desktop specific view looks like that I have created to make sure it works on desktop.
Okay.
But if you still run this
desktop.
Yeah.
Because a few minutes ago we were talking about screen size.
Yes.
Now we're calling things, is there desktop, mobile?
Yes.
What are the device families?
So
these will be
desktop, mobile, Xbox. And these will be the device family that Windows 10 supports. And again, I was saying that
I'm sorry to interrupt. Is it then essentially based on the version of the runtime?
It's not based on the version of the runtime.
The version of Windows?
So Windows by default will run all these device family that we are targeting, which is desktop, Xbox, and mobile, and IoT, and HoloLens. And you should be able to use them as a device family to be able to build your application.
Okay.
Right? Again, this is something that we expect to be not to be a very common scenario. But if people find a reason to do that, this is also supported, and you can go and do that as well. So when you think about adaptive UI, there are different ways for people to build about it. Use default platform controls like split view and relative panel. You can use adaptive triggers to actually toggle the properties on different controls based on the minimum window height and minimum window width. And if you want to go more advanced, you can actually load up a different view altogether based on the device family. So now my application is looking much better. It's working better on desktop as well as on phone. The next thing which I wanted to talk about is .NET Native, right? One of the big things that we have been thinking about in Windows 10 is how to improve the startup time of the application and how to actually reduce the memory footprint of your application. Think about this. Your application is running on phone devices, which have limited memory. Also, it is running on Internet of Things or HoloLens device, right? You really, really want your application to be quick with the startup time, and you really have lower memory
footprint.
I would
argue that even if my application is running on a desktop, I want to.
I agree that, but again, you have more resources there, but it becomes much, much more critical.
More, but never enough.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. With .NET Native, what we have done, we have got some great data on this, and with .NET Native, we have able to improve the startup time of application up to 40%. Mm-hmm. Also, the memory footprint for some of the application has reduced by 20% when we are using .NET Native. So for Windows 10, every application will be compiled with .NET Native toolchain before it gets pushed to the consumer device. So what does that mean? Is when you upload your package to the store, the store will then run the .NET Native toolchain to convert into native binaries, architecture-specific binaries, which are then pushed to the developer machine, or to the consumer machine.
Okay.
So this becomes super critical for developers now, that they actually need to make sure that their application are actually validated against the .NET Native toolchain, because that's what the users will be running on.
Right.
And we have brought that integration in VS as well. So if I go and bring up the project properties, and in the debug configuration, if I go to build, you will see a property called compile with .NET Native toolchain. In the case of debug, it's set to false by default. Let's go and change it to release. And when I switch to release, you will see this property is enabled, right?
Okay.
So what is happening is when you're building debug package, you're building and running against core CLR and JIT, right? But when you're running building release package, we are automatically turning on .NET Native for you so that you can actually validate the .NET Native toolchain for our application and make sure it works fine before uploading to the store.
Okay.
And that's every developer should do that in the workflow. Right. We recommend building the application using debug because building .NET Native toolchain takes a little bit of time. Okay. For example, for my application, it takes up to 1 minute to build it. So it's not like for every iteration you want to do that, but you should think about building your application with debug. But in between, you should switch to release and build your application and run against release to make sure it's working with .NET Native as well.
Okay.
Right. So now this is interesting, right? When I say debug and core CLR, there are devices like Xbox IoT which don't have core CLR running. So how exactly it works? How exactly you will be able to run your application in debug mode on an Xbox or HoloLens device? So if I go and open up the package, so let's actually do this. If I go into bin x86 debug apex folder and take a look at what is actually, this is the package that I was running right now. I will go and open up the manifest file. So the very first thing, when you build your application in VS, as part of the build process, we inject certain dependencies in the manifest file, which are required for your package to for work in the debug scenario. The one of the dependency is the package dependency. And what this is saying is there's a dependency on the core runtime framework package for debug, right? This is only this only happens for debug, right? So what it's saying is, for this application, I need core CLR framework package. So when you go and run your application on Xbox in the debug mode, because of this dependency, VS will first push the core CLR framework package on the device and then push your application so that you can actually run against core CLR, right? And also we make some changes as we make the core runtime or core CLR as a boot up or entry point for the application, which then loads your application itself. This is very transparent to the users. They really don't need to worry about it, but something that they should understand that the debug and the release pipeline are now different and they need to validate both while building their application. Also, you will notice that we are copying a lot of framework assemblies in your package, which is also intentional and by design. This is because when you deploy your application, the CLR needs these framework assemblies. So we basically calculate, we understand what are the reference assemblies that are required by your application, and we copy that as a part of your application package. When you're building .NET Native toolchain, using .NET Native toolchain, then it automatically, statically links all the reference assemblies as part of your DLL itself, right? So let's actually go and see how a .NET Native package looks like. So because it takes a little bit of time, I've already built one. So what I'm going to do is just open that. So we'll go back to this, and I have a .NET Native package for the same application, and it is much more simpler. So here you can see that I have my .NET Native package, and as I mentioned, if I open up the manifest file, you will not see a framework dependency here.
Right.
I don't have a framework dependency, so because it doesn't use this core CLR. Also, we have not changed the entry points here. It's exactly the same manifest that you have created for your application. We do stamp an ILC version in here. And this ILC version is what is being used by the store to compile you. So whatever the .NET Native toolchain you have used to validate your app, the same .NET toolchain will be used by the store as well to build your application to create the .NET Native binaries, right? And the other thing is, you can see the size of the DLL is now huge, right? And this is because we have statically linked all the references as part of your library, and that's because of the static link, you cannot be broken by an update to the .NET framework. So this is what is happening for the .NET Native, and this is something that you should be, as a developer, very careful about, that you should build with release configuration and validate your application while you're developing a Windows 10 Universal app. One other thing that I want to go and talk about is how you should think about, after doing build, we got some good feedback from the developers to think about how I should think about upgrades, right? I already have my existing Windows and Windows Phone 8.1 projects, and now I want to build or take them to support Windows 10. So how exactly you can do that? And in some ways, I think there are two different ways to do it. The first way is you already have your application. In this case, I have my app, which is already built for Windows 8.1 and Windows Phone 8.1, and I'm using shared project and portable class libraries mm-hmm. to share my code. What you can do is, you can go and add another head to your solution. So you go and add myapp.uwp, which is Universal Windows Platform, and then you add shared project and use adaptive code to actually make that Universal Windows app work across all different devices, okay. right? You can use adaptive UI, as I showed, different ways of doing adaptive UI in your Universal Windows app to actually support different form factors. And you continue using shared project PCLs and DLLs to share the code between them.
Okay.
So in this case, I'm also maintaining a Windows 8.1 version, a Windows Phone 8.1 version, and using shared projects to actually build a Universal Windows version as well.
Okay.
Right? That's one way to do it. Now, there are some scenarios.
So in that approach, do you have the UI in the Universal project, and then the shared projects are essentially just code?
Yes, in okay. shared project will essentially be code. You can again think about that you should be able to share some resources. Mm-hmm. Like, so you can have resource dictionaries or some user controls which can be shared. But yes, when you think about using adaptive UI, which is only a Windows 10 concept,
right.
and adaptive triggers, then your UI for the most of the part for UI for Windows 10 will live in the Universal Windows.
Okay.
project. Now, there are some scenarios where, for example, developer thinks that I want to build a package which only needs to be supported on mobile, right? We really, really want people to be building Universal Windows package, and that's what they should be uploading to the store so that we can target wide range of devices. But if there's a scenario for a developer to think about that I want this package to only go for on mobile device,
mm-hmm.
or this package should only go for Xbox device, they can still do that. So to do that, they can use the second approach. They can still go and create, they will create two Universal Windows project. One Windows Universal project for mobile,
okay.
and one for rest of the devices, right?
Okay.
And they are same project template that they are using. So they can add a new Universal Windows project target to a specific device. It's the same Universal Windows project template that exists in Visual Studio. They can open up the manifest file in VS and change the target device family from Windows.universal to Windows.mobile.
Okay.
Right? And then on MSDN, Windows will publish the build numbers of current build numbers that exist for Windows Mobile. You have to go and stamp those values for the min version and max version tested.
Mm-hmm.
So the workflow is a little bit, takes a little bit of additional work, but we don't expect a lot of people to be doing that. Ideally, we expect everybody to be building a Windows Universal package, but if there is a scenario for you to actually go and build a device family specific package,
mm-hmm.
you can do that using that as
well. So explain to me a little bit more about the min version, the max version. When you build a project,
mm-hmm.
the min version and max version tested are automatically going to be set to the version of the OS you're using at the time.
Yes.
Is that correct?
That is a good question, actually. And to explain it better, let's go actually in VS
okay.
and see how that works.
Yeah.
So let's take an example of my cookbook application that I'm using. If I go to the application page, you will see there are two properties,
mm-hmm.
target version and the min version. Right, and right now only have the RC SDK installed, which is 169. But if you have multiple SDKs installed, you will see all of them
so
listed.
So that's the version of the SDK.
Yes.
Not the version of the operating system you're on.
Yes. So when you specify the SDK version and the target version tells the API surface. It determines the API surface that is available for your project. So in this case, I'm targeting 169. This is what defines the reference assemblies, the WinMDs that are being used to build my application,
okay.
right? And this target version, the VS automatically stamps in the manifest file as the max version tested.
Okay.
So target version maps to the max version tested value in the manifest file, and build already does it for you. So you really don't need to worry about it. A developer should think about what is the level API level that I'm targeting, and that should determine the target version for your application, right? The min version tells you the minimum version of Universal Windows Platform that your application requires. Right? So think about that. If you have multiple versions, Windows is being shipped as a service, so they will be shipping frequent releases, and you have different versions of Windows running on for the users, then you should think about setting the min version to be the lowest version a device is running on. Because as a developer, you want to have the wide range. You want to target the maximum number of the devices. Mm-hmm. So to target the maximum range, you should try setting the min version to the lowest version of Universal Windows platform that a device is running on, and think about setting the target version to be the highest version of the SDK that exists, because you want to use the latest and the greatest of the APIs.
But right now, the only thing that appears in those drop downs is 169.
Yes.
So where would you set it to be, either be up or down? Do you have to then go edit the manifest file?
No. So if you go and install a new version of the SDK, VS will automatically detect it and will show you here.
Okay.
So once Windows ships a new flight and a new matching SDK, you can install the SDK on your machine, and then you will automatically see in the target version that the new version is showing up.
Okay.
And you can say, I can go and target that version, and it will automatically pick up the new APIs and make it available for you in Visual Studio.
Okay.
Right? And the min version is automatically stamped in the manifest as well as a min version property. And what min version says that, because it's in the manifest, the store also uses that to say if a device is running any version lower than 169, your application will not be even visible for them in the store. Store will automatically filter out based on min version, because you are saying that my application requires a minimum of 169 to be able to run this application.
And are the build numbers going to be the same across desktop, mobile? What if I now want to put this app on the phone? Do I use the same minimum, maximum build number?
So yes, the idea is exactly the same.
Okay.
So let's bring up the manifest file. So if you bring up the manifest file, you are seeing that the target device family is saying windows.universal.
Okay, so
and that's
everywhere.
What the version is being stamped here.
Mm-hmm.
But as I mentioned, if you end up saying that don't want a universal package and I want a mobile specific package, you will go and change this to windows.mobile,
mm-hmm.
and then you will basically insert the min version and max version tested for mobile, which might be a little bit different from Windows Universal, and you can get it from MSDN.
Okay.
So that is going to be the process. It is possible for developers to do that. We really, really hope that people don't have to do that a lot of times, and it's just going to be an exception case that if somebody runs into that.
Okay.
So that pretty much covers from starting with your project, using device-specific capabilities, writing adaptive code, using all the XAML features to write adaptive UI, making sure your application works against release with .NET Native Toolchain, and then uploading your package to the store.
Awesome.
That's it. That's the easy way to build a Windows 10 application.
So the best way for people to get started, if they haven't done it already, join the Windows Insider Program. Go to dev.windows.com.
Mm-hmm.
Join the Insider Program to get Windows 10.
That's correct.
Ideally, don't run it on your production machine yet.
Yes.
ideally. Do you know if we have VMs on it in MSDN?
I know they were planning to put some ops. I don't know whether they have it right now.
That'd be another option if we had those.
Yes.
It's got to be build at least 174 or higher.
Yeah.
Get Visual Studio 2015 RC, either enterprise or community, both work.
Yep.
Install the tools.
Yes.
Get going.
And that's it. And
awesome.
You can get started. And if you have questions, you can definitely, so I just mentioned the samples.
Okay.
This is a GitHub location. A lot of great samples there that people can actually go and download and try them. And also we have launched a developer assistant toolkit for allowing developers to directly view code snippets and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
You can go and try that as well. And if you have questions, shoot me an email and I'm happy to answer that.
All right.
Thanks for your time,
Thanks
Robert.
So much.
Absolutely.
Hope you like that. Get started building Windows 10 apps and let us know what you think. And we'll see you next time on Visual Studio Toolbox.